This is the Effective Engineering Manager podcast. In today's episode, Slava and Adam discuss effective methods for managing hyper-performers on your teams.
Welcome to the Effective Engineering Manager podcast.
Hello, Slava. It's your time today. What would you like to talk about?
Today, I'd like to talk about managing hyper-performers effectively. We're going to share who the hyper-performers are, what distinguishes them from the rest of the team, how to manage hyper-performers for the maximum results while retaining them. We will share what management practices to avoid, and in the end, we'll provide a checklist that our listeners can use to manage their hyper-performers effectively.
That's certainly an intriguing topic. Why do you want to talk about hyper-performers?
I want to talk about hyper-performers because they are invaluable assets to the company. And when managed right, they will bring a significant contribution to the company and to the customers. And when managed wrong, they will leave promptly and the company will lose.
Yeah, I think hyper-performers is such a great topic to discuss because I certainly would think that most engineering managers or managers in general, have that person or persons on their team that, are either the right-hand man or the one that gets everything done or just a real wealth of knowledge or skill that is, as you said, makes it so valuable to the company. And I think it's important to definitely differentiate hyper performers from even strong performers or adequate performers. And because how we manage them could be different. And I think that's kind of what you're alluding to here. So to dive into it, can we define a hyper performer?
Yes. Generally speaking, a hyper performer is a member of the team who is able to take on and deliver on objectives that other members on the same level cannot. And there are multiple characteristics that hyper-performers exhibit. First, they treat their work as business owners, not just showing up and doing their best. Most likely, they will request you to be responsible for the end-to-end delivery of the area of responsibility and for cross-functional collaboration. They have a strong sense of ownership. This means that they're likely to drive not only building the product, but also coordinating with horizontal and vertical partners and working across organizational boundaries unprompted. They have a strong sense of urgency and are highly effective. Once they have an objective, they'll pursue the results relentlessly, and they have high performance standards starting with themselves. They consistently produce results and often 2-3 times of the output of their peers. They get things done without supervision. All they need is an objective, and then you just let them go, let them run towards the results. And they're highly efficient and have very low tolerance for self-inflicted inefficiencies around them and in the teams they're responsible for. They also have a strong sense of pride in the results of their work, and they demonstrate high levels of emotional intelligence, which is a key enabler in their ability to manage up, down, and across.
I think that's a really strong definition, and you lay out a lot of important areas. How we manage hyper-performers is critical because we need to keep feeding them and so that they can continue to be successful and flourish. And I know in some organizations I've been a part of, oftentimes hyper-performers are identified just as really strong performers, and you sort of put them on the course of, the normal programs and whatnot to, aid them. And I think oftentimes those can actually work against the effort, even though it's a great intention to say, put them into an accelerated training program, accelerated growth program. Oftentimes that's not what they need. So can we talk a little bit about how hyper performers are different from other members of the team and how that can encourage us to manage them differently?
The difference is visible, and I just gave a list of well-defined characteristics of hyper-performers. And if you have a great team, there's a very good chance that most of the team members exhibit some of those characteristics I just mentioned. It's just the hyper-performers exhibit all of them.
Right, and I think that's a really key distinction. And you mentioned differentiating hyper-performers from others on the team that might have some of those characteristics that you would just consider really good people. So how are hyper-performers different from superstars, for example?
It's a good question. And I consider superstars individuals who are extremely good at their specialization, as in 3-5 times better than anyone else around them, while lacking the sense of ownership, sense of urgency, delivering on objectives, cross-functional collaboration, and very often superstars have poor emotional intelligence. So superstars may have a value in some situations, and personally, I would pick a reliable, steady team for a team of superstars any day. Now, speaking of managing hyper-performers, there are very well-defined things that a manager has to do to be successful, because it is work, and you need to know what you're doing, because this is not just something that may come naturally, especially if you're managing a hyper-performer first time. And even the second and third and fourth time, you'll always learn. And these are the things that we've learned managing hyper-performers, and we were lucky to have them. And speaking of luck, I would say that I consider yourself lucky if you got a hyper-performer to yourself, because you will get consistently amazing results from their work. And it's important to know that that hyper-performers require enablement from you as their manager more than anyone else on the team. And also, managing hyper-performers requires strong delegation skills on the part of the manager, because it is very likely that they will do it not the way you would have done it. So having strong delegation skills is critical. And if someone told you that you don't, then maybe it's a good time to start brushing it up. And so here's what's required from you as an enabler. And I'm going to keep saying enabler instead of a manager, because that's what you are to the hyper-performer. First, and the most important thing is set aggressive objectives. Do not set how they should do something. Set what they should accomplish. And with meaningful milestones, of course, but it should be an objective and not a set of tasks. Because the best way to discourage your hyper-performer is to tell them how to do their job. Second, set up longer than usual one-on-ones, ideally 1 to 1.5 hours versus usual 3 minutes. They get done a lot, and they have a lot to talk about. And it's worth investing your time in your hyper-performer, because the return on investment of your time is usually 3 to 5 times of the usual. And the third, provide support. It means that you have to provide all required resources. Their work doesn't come for free, and they'll need money, they will need time, they'll need connections, they'll need pushing certain things through for things to happen, and this is where you come in and help. Also, it's important that you eliminate obstacles. There are going to be obstacles, internal, cross-functional, and not everyone is going to be or will be willing to operate on the same level of intensity as hyper-performers. And nothing discourages hyper-performers like people who they depend on dragging their feet. So you as a manager have to use your clout to reach out horizontally and vertically and make sure that there are no obstacles in their way, in their path to success. Also, hyper-performers will most likely require building their own team and setting up their own processes that work best for them. And you have to support that, because it's I've seen it before that there may be internal resistance to that, that people may be asking, why is that they're getting a team I'm not, or why is that they're getting so many people I don't. And that's where you have to be professional but firm in supporting them. That's sort of solid description of what you as a manager have to do to make your hyper performer successful.
Yeah, I really like that, Slava, and I think as you're talking through some of that, I'm thinking about some experiences of my own, and also sort of categorizing some of this. And I like when you say hyper performers often require building their own team, because as we know in engineering, as in a lot of other fields, oftentimes we reward people who are really good engineers by putting them into, just kind of like accelerating them into leadership. And that may not be the best path for them. And I think we've, in previous episodes, we've talked about how do you as a manager, build effective, coaching, communication plans, so you can identify, future leaders. But in this case, can you help differentiate between why a hyper performer or how a hyper performer may need their own team to, sort of accelerate at the pace they need, and how that would be different from that individual maybe being just the next in line to be a leader or lead the team, something like that, or another team?
Yes, and so when I talk about hyper performers, and maybe I should have said it in the beginning of this episode, we are talking about managers, right? We are talking about hyper performer managers, and that's why mentioning building a team or expanding the team comes naturally. If you have a hyper performer engineer, there's got to be a slightly different or maybe quite different situation, because some of the practices I'm describing apply if you have a hyper-performing engineer who's a very emotionally intelligent, super helpful to other folks, gets his stuff done amazingly well, and also helps everyone around him to get stuff done. Most of these practices apply. In terms of the team building, I think when it comes to engineers, and I've seen it more than once, and I help quite a few folks launch their careers in management because I recognize that ability. If you see this ability, and I think it comes, it's one of those situations when you see it, it's true, but it's one of the situations when there are key indicators that someone is ready for leadership. Again, emotional intelligence, desire to help other people, desire to help the team, desire to help the team grow and be there for them and taking care not only of themselves but also taking care of the team. If you see someone like this, there's a good chance that you may start talking about them getting into leadership and management roles. But today we're just talking about managing hyper-performing managers.
I appreciate that. It's a good distinction. And so I think one of the traits you're saying from a hyper performer is a manager, and the reason that they sort of need to build out their own team is because they already have a well formulated idea of what they need to do to achieve the business goal. And then you're just trying to, as you mentioned, enable them the success of doing that. Whereas another manager or another team that you may be responsible for might be a little bit more task driven towards, different business goals, but you're sort of putting some guardrails around what that team is doing because you may not have a hyper performer that checks all those boxes that you were talking about. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely. And I think I won't be able to say it better. Hyper performers need capabilities, and a manager as an individual can accomplish only that much, and the manager's job is to make sure that stuff gets done by driving the team. And because they get so much, they can do so much more, they need more people to get that stuff done. So that's why it's natural for hyper performers to grow their teams, because it's just they just need more hands to accomplish those objectives.
Right. Yeah, that makes absolute sense. So you talked a little bit about managing hyper performers. How do we reward hyper performers? Is that a different path as well?
It is, and I think it's going. I hope it's going to come through this conversation that hyper performers are not normal and typical, and that's why approaches are not normal and typical. The approaches are different. The approaches are more advanced, and when it comes to rewarding hyper performers do have a strong sense of ownership, and they also do have a strong sense of what they are worth. And as such, they're very sensitive to being rewarded for their hyper performance and for their successes. So managers, they deserve it, and they know they deserve it. And managers should keep an eye on their successes and appreciate them through one-on-ones, in public through kudos, launch celebrations and all the good stuff. And also this sort of a people level appreciation is super critical, but it's not enough. And you as a manager must ensure that they get rewarded handsomely when it comes to bonuses and promotions. And if you do that, all you're going to get is just more and more of great performance. Now, there are things that you need to watch for, because hyper performers don't come for free, and it's management work for you, because you have to enable them, you have to take care of them, you have to remove obstacles from their way, you have to reward them, and you have to be with them. And because hyper performers still members of the team, and they're still people, and people management component is critical here. So, and hyper performers do need periodical check-ins on what they're working on. And I would recommend that long-term programs require a check-in every 2 weeks, and otherwise a weekly check-in through one-on-one is great. And can be done through one-on-ones, through extended one-on-ones. It can be done through separate or dedicated program meetings with them, where you discuss only the business and you don't discuss any people management things, which is usually what usually happens during one-on-ones. And having those check-ins on the progress of what they're doing serves both making sure that they know you care, but also serves the purpose of you as a manager maintaining situational awareness and making sure that the things are on track. And for hyper performers, because they do tend to operate independently and do tend to operate on objectives rather than minute tasks, it also creates a possibility that they may drive not in the general direction where they should be driving, maybe with building something that shouldn't be built, or maybe going too broad. It happens to everyone, right? And that's why having those check-ins on the progress of their objectives and having milestones is important. Because what the danger is that once someone gets a hyper performer, they may think, okay, I have this great individual, they're so awesome, I'm just going to let them do their thing and get out of the way. And it's the danger is getting out of the way too far and sort of essentially abandoning them and leaving them to themselves. That's not going to work.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like you mentioned, hyper performance have a strong sense of ownership, a lot of pride. Not that others don't, but there's a sort of a unique sense to that fuels them. And, normal rewards, you know, well, let me put it this way. I would think that hyper performers sort of indirectly or implicitly expect to be a little bit higher rewarded. You know, they know they're the cream of the crop, I think. I mean, without being too conceited, but I think there is that sense of, you know, pride and ownership really leads to them knowing that they are at the top. And I think your point about managers being having a close eye on them and finding ways to, you know, sort of creatively appreciate and recognize their success in public is really important. That really helps fuel them and continue, you know, to do well. And I also think you did, you mentioned things to watch out for, because it's so important with hyper performers that to truly treat them as somewhat different. And there are certain things that you're going to have to be mindful of with them that you don't necessarily with others. So leaning into that a little bit more, what are some other things that don't work well when managing hyper performers, when you have to manage a hyper performer?
A good question. And there's certainly a way to do it wrong. And the results are usually somewhere between negative and catastrophic, because doing things wrong with hyper performers most likely is going to lead them and away and drive them away. And you end up with losing the most important people on your team and the most productive people on your team. So what doesn't work? I think the most important thing, and I mean, if I had to just drop everything else, it's micromanagement. Hyper performers work well and deliver most when they work on objectives. And those objectives have to be audacious, but doable. And I'll give you an objective, an example of an objective. And you and I think I can safely say that you were one of my hyper performers, one of just few. And I'll just give us an example of you working on building partnership program at Arlo. The objective was to build a strong program that would support our key partners through both API partnership and APIs, partnership backend systems, and also processes for onboarding and managing partners. And that's an objective, right? Make a partnership work. Giving tasks to hyper performers is the best way to kill their motivation, because their sense of ownership and their sense of knowing what's right and how to do things right and get things done may not necessarily agree with the set of tasks you would give someone to accomplish what you're trying to do. And that's why giving an objectives and not giving tasks or orders every other hour is critical. And that's why I mentioned that delegation skills are critical in the manager who has a hyper performer, because you really have to be prepared that things A, are going to get done, and B, not necessarily the way you would get them done. So, and I mentioned a bit, maybe I'll just dive into this a bit more, is taking hyper performers for granted. Unlike the rest of the team, from the point you're standing, things are happening automatically. Yet, they still need care, they still need your direction, they still need your attention. They still need them, I would say require, extended one-on-ones. They still need your priority support. So don't let your hyper performers to sort of run away from you or you run away from them. Don't leave them alone. So check-ins are important, we mentioned it. One of the dangers of not checking in, I mentioned is that it's just because they're so active, they may be driving fast and maybe fast not in the exact direction you would want them to go. Doesn't mean that it's going to happen, but it's quite possible. But also, if no one is asking how they're doing, and if no one is paying attention, if no one is acknowledging, and if no one is showing that they care, this is one of the best ways to demotivate them after micromanagement. Sort of if you do the opposite, right? Instead of, if you hover over them, that's bad. But if you leave them alone, it's also bad. So checking on the progress and having a meaningful management and technology conversations is important. How often really depends. Like I said, if it's a, you know, 12 to 24 month program, quite possible that if you check in every 3-4 weeks, it's going to be meaningful, and shorter programs, normal one-on-ones work. So what else? Bad politics. Another thing which doesn't really work is allowing bad politics to touch or impact or affect your hyper performer. There's a very good chance that the people who are not hyper performers will dislike them and will try to harm them, not necessarily, most likely not physically, but by dragging their feet, but by avoiding work and all the good stuff. So maybe being territorial, and it's not that because they're bad, but because it's just they're just maybe sense of that, you know, whatever can be driving that bad politics can be there, and. It's your job as a manager to recognize situations like this early, keep an eye on this. And if something begins to happen, you have to quench it as soon as possible, or things are not going to work for you. And one last thing which doesn't work and should be avoided, is trying to fit your hyper performers or a hyper performer. I mean, you're lucky if you have one. I forget about hyper performers. Trying to fit your hyper performer into a status quo and trying to make them to make sure that they're just like everyone else, that they lay low, try to make them like everyone else. It just doesn't work. They're not like everyone else. And it's your job as a manager to foster that difference, to foster that capabilities, and that allow them to be, allow them to deliver those spectacular results and deliver this 3 to 5x performance. So, and if you do manage your hyper performer right, you'll get stellar results.
Thank you, Slava. That's a really comprehensive list, and will certainly provide some great guidance for all of our listeners to identify what they're doing today to manage any hyper performers you have and what to avoid. I think if there's one thing to touch on with that, I think the concept about the bad politics is interesting because. Certainly, people on a team who are not capable of being hyper performers could become jealous, as you mentioned, territorial, almost competitive against some of the hyper performers, right, and making it harder. And I think that's a really important thing. I think you say, you have to squash that because, you need your hyper performers to thrive, because if they thrive, the business thrives, the group as a whole thrives, and you're really helping. Pull along people who might not be hyper performers, but good in their own right, and just need that sense of guidance or support or that missing skill. So it's as I've always thought, building all star teams is never a great idea. It's about building good complementary teams, and a hyper performer can be a great complement to a lot of things that you might find as gaps in your own team and organization. So I think that that's a really good thing to think about and reflect and kind of align, take a look at your own team and organization and see, man, what are the things that are causing high performers to not be successful? So thank you for sharing this, and really great definition and a lot of good guidance. To kind of summarize, can you give us a checklist that our listeners can take away from here tomorrow and start using to effectively manage, identify and manage hyperperformers?
Yes. Here's the checklist. Number one, set aggressive objectives, not how-tos. Don't manage by giving tasks. Second, set up longer than usual one-on-ones, ideally 1 to 1.5 hour. It's worth all investing your time in your hyperperformer. Third, provide all resources your hyperperformer needs. Fourth, eliminate internal and cross-functional obstacles in front of them. Fifth, support your hyperperformers building their teams and setting up engineering processes that work best for them. And sixth, reward them generously for their successes.
Thank you, Slava. This was a great list. This was really good stuff.
Thank you, Adam. And more good stuff is coming. I encourage our listeners sharing this episode if you like it. And we are looking forward to feedback and suggestions. We can be reached at contact@effectiveem.com and www.effectiveem.com.